Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC, dedicated to pursuing and pioneering treatments that will one day be the standard worldwide. For more information, visit upmc.com/happeningtoday.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Experts estimate 1 in 5 Americans experience a mental illness each year. The COVID-19 pandemic has only increased anxiety, stress, loneliness, panic attacks, and more. As a result, more people have focused on their mental health, and perhaps that has lessened some of the stigma attached to mental health. That stigma has often kept those suffering from mental illness from seeking treatment or getting help. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and today is National Mental Health Action Day. UPMC is offering a free mindfulness seminar Friday designed to provide tools to alleviate stress and anxiety. We're joined by Dr. Matthew Herford, Vice President of Behavioral Health at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center's Insurance Services Division. Dr. Herford, welcome to the program. And we'll start with that question about the pandemic. Did the pandemic make mental illness more prevalent?
Morning, Scott. Thank you for having me. This is such an important question. And really, the evidence points to yes, that we saw an increase in anxiety, stress, substance use disorders, and suicide, very sadly. So not surprising when you consider that the pandemic really has been both a physical and emotional traumatic event at a population pandemic level.
You know, but a lot of people become anxious, lonely, or stressed, and especially in the last 2 years. When does it become a mental illness?
So this is a great question. And it's important for listeners to not worry about being a diagnostician. It's not their responsibility to figure out what crosses over into being a mental illness or not. The most important thing is to be comfortable having conversations with people that you know and care about if you see them struggling. We do this in physical health all the time. If you see somebody who might be going through a physical illness or suffering from a physical injury, we reach out, we offer help, we make sure somebody's okay. But historically, we've struggled with doing that when it comes to mental health matters. I do think that the COVID epidemic has lowered some of the stigma associated with this because people are hearing and seeing so many people struggle with these challenges. And having conversations like this, using opportunities like Mental Health Awareness Month to generate more conversation is helping more people seek treatment. And we're seeing that in the rising numbers of requests for things like therapy across the country. To your question about how do you know when something rises to a certain level, I, again, would encourage people to have a low threshold for checking in with themselves if they feel like they're not bouncing back from the day-to-day stressors or they see somebody in their family, at school, at work that they think is struggling. Check in with them. Suggest that maybe they want to contact their insurance company. UPMC and Community Care Behavioral Health maintain 24/7 lines. People can call and find out if there's treatment available, which there is, and how to get connected to it. It's so much better to ask for that help and to reach out for it than to suffer in silence.
But at the same time, I think you kind of touched on this. People probably can be confused somewhat. I mean, they can feel anxious, maybe even have a panic attack for the first time and say, is this just something that is a short term, a one day, maybe something, a one time thing? Or is this a long term mental illness? How do you make that? How do you differentiate that?
Yeah. Well, it's a tough thing, you know, and we do this all the time when it comes, again, to physical health challenges. You might get a cold or something. And after a day or two, you start to feel better. You say, I probably don't need to go to my doctor. But if it lingers or you start having trouble breathing, we check in with ourselves about those kinds of symptoms and say, this doesn't feel like a normal cold to me, and get some treatment. I went for a bike ride last weekend. On Monday, my knee was a little bit sore. But, you know, by Tuesday afternoon, I was doing okay. If I was still hurting or having trouble going upstairs, I might go get some treatment. And the same can be said about mental health challenges. If you have a period where you're feeling stressed and you are not bouncing back, it's interfering with your things like sleep, your appetite, your ability to go about your day, do the things that you normally enjoy in life. Those are some of the indicators that might suggest he could benefit from an evaluation or getting some additional help or support. I would also add, Scott, that you know not everything we're talking about is going to require medication or therapy appointments. There's lots and lots of ways that people can help to reduce and manage things like anxiety, depression, and loneliness that don't require professional services. So we know that good sleep hygiene, reducing and keeping alcohol and certainly drug use to a minimum can be very helpful. Regular exercise, yoga, meditation, mindfulness. These are all things that don't require a prescription. They don't require a visit to a doctor or to a hospital, but they're evidence-based interventions with no side effects that can really help these things. So if someone's going through some of those experiences, they might benefit from treatment and counseling. But there's also a whole lot of things people can do that can help. And we have a mindfulness webinar that's going to be available to the public tomorrow, Friday, May 20th at 12 p.m. You do not need to be a member of UPMC Health Plan or Community Care Behavioral Health. It's free and open to the public. Your listeners can go to ccbh.com/mindful. This is a 20-minute, very practical workshop on mindfulness meditation, and it helps you learn how to do relaxation breathing, just a great technique to help manage some of the stresses and challenges we've been discussing this morning.
Okay, I want to ask something that we have heard over the years. Take those three deep breaths. Is that too simple of I don't want to say a cure, but a way to maybe feel better?
Listen, there's a great evidence base behind just taking good deep breaths. There's like everything, there's a scientific way to do things. And you think, wow, breathing, we've all been doing that our whole lives. We know how to do it. But there's actually an approach. It's easy to learn. You can take the webinar tomorrow and learn how to do it. But when we do that kind of purposeful, mindful, relaxed breathing, we actually send very specific signals to our autonomic nervous system. That's the nervous system, part of the nervous system that manages things like your fight or flight response. When you're under stress for a long period of time, your brain, a part of your brain called the amygdala, is activated. And you can think of the amygdala as kind of like the alarm system in your house. And in times of stress, like with what's going on with COVID or perhaps some of the economic stress that people are experiencing, that alarm switch in the amygdala is stuck in the on position. And one of the ways that we can help turn that alarm switch off is by practicing relaxation breathing. When your body, your mind feels itself breathing more slowly, more intentionally, it sends the message, everything's okay. There's not a fire in the house. I can turn this alarm off. So never too simple to do something that works.
I use that figure that one in five people experience a mental health episode or some mental illness each year. And that figure actually came before the pandemic. It may be a little bit higher now, but where does that figure come from?
Lots of epidemiologic research, and we looked at many, many sources of publicly available data, quite literally millions and millions of treatment claims. And this has been information and data that's been validated, not just in this country, but across the world. So the usual statistic, as you cited, Scott, is around 20%, might be as high as 25%. And when we talk about that rate, you have to understand, we're talking about a pretty broad spectrum of mental health challenges. Everything from situational anxiety, you mentioned panic disorder, depression, all the way up to what we also refer to as very serious mental illnesses like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. Anxiety and depression are by far the most common. But at 20-25% of the population, we're talking about 50-60 million Americans that are experiencing some type of mental health challenge in the course of a given year. You mentioned the COVID epidemic. There's no question that we've seen a rise in the prevalence of some of these disorders. And tragically, we're also seeing a rise in some of the fatalities associated with it. So as an example, over 50,000 suicides in the United States. In Pennsylvania, that's over 2,000 deaths, one Pennsylvanian per hour dying by suicide. Sadly, that statistic is even, that rate is even higher for certain racial and ethnic minorities. So we, like in other areas of healthcare, we've got some significant health equity challenges that we need to be addressing as a society, as a state, and as a culture. The good news, again, is that treatment works. And so while those numbers are staggeringly and unacceptably high, the good news is that we can do something about it. Having conversations, raising awareness, reducing stigma, using new technologies. At UPMC, we're helping to promote and champion things like telebehavioral health, using digital wellness tools, lots of different ways to interact with people. We want folks to know that however and wherever they need help, they can get it.
One of the reasons I brought up that that statistic is another statistic that would seem to present a bit of a challenge is that even though you say there could be 50-60 million Americans that have suffered from mental illness each year, that half don't seek any kind of treatment or any kind of help whatsoever. Why not?
I think the answer is multifactorial, but certainly a couple of things jump right to the top of the list. The first has got to be stigma, that there is still, unfortunately, a lot of stigma out there about people acknowledging that maybe they're having some emotional struggles and they feel reluctant to talk to their doctor, talk to their family member about what they're going through. The second is there's no question that for some people in some communities, access to good mental health treatment is a concern. So we're seeing and hearing about that across the country where people call and find that wait times are very long. Maybe they can't find a therapist that treats their concern or the hours aren't convenient. And there are lots of things that we can be doing. Again, I think tools like what we're offering through UPMC and community care and our providers where we use telebehavioral health, people can connect using video technology, for example, is one way of helping to make sure people get that access. But those are a couple of the most often cited reasons about why people are not getting that care. And that 50% statistic that you talked about, that is just unacceptable because people are suffering. It's leading to lots of impairments. It's leading to a tragic loss of life. And mental illness never just affects the one person. There's always a family or a community or a system that's around that individual. And so there's a ripple effect here that we need to be mindful of and helping to support.
One of the big factors that you touched on is access. And you said that there are some communities that have maybe even more of an issue, more of a hurdle getting access. I don't think it's just some communities. I mean, from what I understand, I mean, there are people who seek help, can't get an appointment for months. Mm-hmm. Access, and it has become even worse from what I understand during the pandemic. I mean, this seems to be almost an epidemic in this country where access is a real problem.
It's a challenge that we have to face because the consequences of not addressing it are too great. There are a number of different ways that people can go about accessing care and treatment. If you have insurance, I can encourage you to call and contact your insurance company. Other ways that you can seek care, talk with your employer. Many employers, companies offer employee assistance programs. UPMC, for example, has an employee assistance program that offers free counseling sessions as part of its benefit package. That's a way that people can get free confidential support in their workplace. Other areas, many of your listeners may not have any insurance. I would encourage them to contact their county mental health offices, who maintain a list of resources for people to access mental health treatment at low or no cost. And then in Pennsylvania, we're really fortunate to have a couple of fantastic mental health advocacy organizations with really active chapters, Mental Health America and NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, both of which maintain warm lines and resources both on their websites and in their phone numbers where people can call and get referrals for treatment. So if you find that you knock on one door and you get feedback around a wait list, I would encourage people to keep knocking and try different doors. Some of those resources might be helpful. But there is no question. We need to make further investments in getting people trained in mental health treatment so that we have more providers and we can help meet the growing needs and demands that we're seeing.
When does someone go to an emergency room in a hospital for a mental health issue?
Well, there's no more important question than that, Scott. Thanks for asking. And of course, if there's ever a concern that you have about your own safety or that of someone in your life, you just don't want to hesitate and you want to call 911 or get them to an emergency room. It doesn't even have to be in a psychiatric emergency room. Medical emergency departments can provide that kind of emergency support. So if you or someone you know are having thoughts of hurting themselves or hurting anyone else, or appear to no longer be capable of just meeting the basic activities of daily living, then that's an indication that you should just seek that emergency care. And then there's treatment that can be immediately provided, whether that's in a psychiatric facility or as on an emergency outpatient basis. Those resources can be brought to bear very quickly.
The seminar that you mentioned, that is tomorrow, right?
That's right. So Friday, May 20th at 12 p.m., you can register at ccbh.com/mindful. If that time isn't convenient for your listeners, the webinar will be available on demand following the live broadcast tomorrow. Again, don't need to be a member of our health plan. It's free and open to the public.
Dr. Matthew Herford is Vice President of Behavioral Health at UPMC's Insurance Services Division. Dr. Herford, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for highlighting this important issue.